हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Jai. So now we're continuing with the Satkriyasar Deepika. I think last time we finished the
introduction,
and then we'll go on now to the preliminary procedures. But I would just want to review one thing is the last basically sentence of the introduction, where Gopal Bhatta Goswami makes this point. Therefore, it is said that sannyas is to give up completely nitya, naimittika, and kamika activities, whereas tyaga is to perform all those activities, giving up the fruits. There should be no confusion about this. Right, so his point is that it's just very clear. So now this is very interesting, because here is the devotee that is then defining about the worship of the deities, and in this case, the performance of the samskars and all those different things. And so here he's making the very clear distinction, because otherwise, these things, because you're dealing in the external world, right? You're engaging the body and senses and mind, then, which is technically not us, but we're, it's useful for us to engage. So we have to be very clear is that exactly what we're dealing with, because one must always appreciate that since it's about pure devotional service, we make very much this distinction. At the same time, then we're also the most kind of accommodating on that. That's the uniqueness, is that we're the most strict when it comes to the very exact definition and what it exactly means. At the same time, we're the most accommodating. So because the farther you go one way, you can balance it the other. So those that are just going up to the point of liberation, then their also accommodation is not very wide, because what they're doing is following all the rules and regulations, but they're going from kamika, doing it to please themselves or get a benefit from the nitya, naimittik, and kamika, that they are in the beginning basically giving it up and without attachment, nishkam karma yoga. In other words, from going from karma yoga to nishkam karma yoga. Karma yoga means I'm doing it for the fruits, I want the benefits, but I'm willing to give those benefits to Krishna, or some benefits to Krishna. Nishkam karma yoga means I don't want the benefits from that, but I'm still performing it. And you get the results from that, which is liberation or freedom, purification. But then sannyas means it's only for Krishna. The only reason I'm doing it is because Krishna has given this to be done, and so I'm doing it to please him. I'm not worried about the benefits that come from it or anything like that. Those are of no interest to me. So the Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are of no interest to me. Even it purifies me, even it frees me from sinful activities, even it frees me from material entanglement. That's not my interest. The pure devotee is, I just want to be absorbed in you, Krishna. And therefore, that actually gives the taste for the soul, because being liberated still doesn't give a taste for the soul. It's just a pleasant situation, but there's still nothing for the soul, because it's only sat. So until there's chit and ananda, until the ananda part's there, which comes by interacting with Krishna as Bhagavan, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the person, right? And then so going beyond this thing that, okay, he's controlling, he is the material energy, he controls the material energy. But that him, the person, who is he and what does he want? And so that'll take it beyond the scope of the material energy, even though we're still dealing with this energy. So that's why only a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva can take it to this level. The other four philosophies, and of course Advaitavad, they can't get to this. They may be kind of aware that it's there, but it's not of an interest to them. So the Gaudiya philosophy, as then revealed by, formulated in, by Baladeva Vidyabhushan in the Vedanta Sutra commentary. But we see here is that Lord Caitanya has given this to the Goswamis, and then Rupa Goswami writes, and Jiva Goswami, and then here, you know, applying in the realm of performing all these regular activities that we do, the rituals and that of sadhana bhakti, that he's pointing out that there's a difference between you're just doing it to please Krishna, or you're doing it without attachment, or you're doing it for your own benefit. Even though that benefit may be given to Krishna, may be karma yoga. So karma, of course, is given up. Karma yoga means it's connected to Krishna. So there's some detachment, there's some attachment. Nishkam karma yoga is basically minimal attachment, but only slight, you know, to that pleasantness of being become purified. But then pure devotional service is no interest in any of these four, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, and there's only the interest to please Krishna. So he's pointing out that there should be no confusion about this, right? And so you're clear, this is what it is, and what stage you're at, that's what you apply. But because it's for Krishna, it's devotional service. But you'll have that mix, so mix like that, until it comes to that point of pure. So it's not a problem like that. So therefore, then Krishna's pointing out that the position of sannyas is better than that of tyag, but the best is just that of pure devotional service, right? So that's why then sarva dharmam parityaja, after explaining so nicely about the difference between the two and how to engage both of them nicely in Krishna's service. So in other words, one is that you're accepting, acknowledging, the existence of things, or Krishna's the existence, or as the controller of all these things, but then you're putting it, well, what does please Krishna himself? Right? That's then the point. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
You've mentioned that it's the definitions are very strict, but it's clear, but I just lost that the second part is that we have, you know, the most accommodating.
Yes.
Are you talking about philosophy or action or both?
Both.
So what does it mean actually?
Means in philosophy means we always stick to, means that's always going to be the philosophy and all that's going to be exactly according to what's there, but generally you see we're willing to take the explanations of the philosophy out to whatever the level of the individual that we're dealing with. So let's say you're talking to yogis, and you can use yoga terms, but we'll describe direct Vedanta philosophy. So that point of adjusting the philosophy, that will never do. But what we're meaning is that you can have people that are complete, not following any regulation and or any proper lifestyle, but they may come along, they can take part in the programs that we have, and, you know, take prasad and the kirtan, you know, as long as they behave themselves and all that. But like you see many times, you see with others that you can't even go into the temples, you know, unless you have a particular dress, a particular this and that. You know, means like in India, it'll be limited. You have to dress properly. You know, in other words, you can't just go in shorts and a t-shirt, you know, one of those singlets because you just got out of bed in the morning. That kind of thing means you have to, you know, put on your proper, even at least a lungi or something, and then a proper shirt or something like that. But we're not asking much more than that, you know. It's just that, you know, how a gentleman would go out in public. Otherwise, some people nowadays don't know what a standard is. But that's just because it's, you know, it's not nice for Krishna. But it's not that the action. So we know that all the chanting and this and that, you can chant you know, whatever the situation, while others, then they'll, you know, be very like situated, put on all their malas and sit very nicely and then do their chanting and stuff like that. That's nice, but they're doing it because that's what you have to do. So that falls then into the nitya and not, you know, nitic, into this nitya naimitic or kamika activities. So it's working within that realm of the karma aspect. Well, for us, since you can chant anywhere, anytime, anything like that. So you see is that it gets a little bit broader there because of that. But at the same time, it's not that the acharyas don't know that themselves. It's just that they're followers as such. So we see Ramanujacharya, when he got the mantra, then he went and announced it to everybody could chant it, because by that, then they could all go back to Godhead, you know. So his guru was both pleased that he has that mood to benefit everybody, but at the same time as this kind of mantra is kept for, you know, how you say when you get diksha. You know, it's not the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that does have no rules. The one he was talking about, that does have some rules to it. And so therefore then, but he was willing to give that to, that they may get benefited. So that's the whole point of that. The Nama Kirtan then takes care of that and everybody can take part. So you see, it's just a little bit, it means it's very close. I mean, it's very close between the Vaishnavas, but we're just saying that it's not quite as, you know, does that make sense? You know, you can be a little bit outside the group, and let's say you go into some other groups, they don't want you to be outside the group. You know, when you extend it out, the Vaishnavas go even out to just all the monotheistic religions. They're a little bit more strict. They won't even definitely talk to you or anything, look at you or stuff like that. You know, like that.
Yes, Maharaj, thank you. That's clear.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Yes.
I have a question on we see that the devotees, they need not perform any of the nitya naimitika and kamya karmas.
Yes.
That is prescribed for general public, but
yes,
the kind of nitya activities we perform are the regulative principles of 64 regulative principles, as we can take for us.
He's from the Pancharatra.
Yeah, from the Pancharatra.
Yes.
So the difficulty is then for some at different stages, certain principles gain prominence, and after one reached a certain stage, based on then the level, then focuses on other principles, and some principles are not followed to great extent. For example, if somebody is more into the Shravanam and Kirtanam, then certain principles are focused more. But for Archanam, then other principles.
Then
in these situations, then like right now we see somebody says, oh, this has to be followed, and another says this need not be followed. How to judge?
Well, it's a matter of, we can always inquire is, you know, why does it have to be followed? What's the necessity? You know, because the point is if they're making the point it has to be followed, that means that there's some contemplation or understanding of what's there. There's some analysis, so they should be able to explain that analysis. Mm-hmm. But if it's just because they felt like it or it makes sense to them, then that's not quite enough to be able to make that statement strongly. You know, unless they're just saying that the acharya said, like the acharya say, association, that's how everything's going to do. So if you make that confident, because the acharyas have said.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is there, then you can say. But if it's a matter of taste, because we see that in the Navavida Bhakti, then it's given that who has become perfect by each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that means you can focus on that. Like when Prabhupada's explaining in seventh canto, when Prahlad Maharaj then gives the that verse, about Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So then in that purport, then let's say in the point about Bandhanam, offering prayers, then Prabhupada said if you want to, you know, you want to perfect your devotional service through prayers, then he gives that there's a few rules. You can't offer obeisances with upper clothing on the up on your body. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't stand onto the deity's left, you know, means that, you know, on the right, for our right of the deities, you have to stand on the deity's right and offer the prayers. You know, so there's certain things you need to do that shows that prayers are, you know, important for you. So therefore you're following those elements connected with that. And so that's fine. That's fine. But it should be understood that those are for that particular one. So the point of the chanting, that's there for everybody. But if you want to make it that's mainly all you're doing, then yes, you need to increase the chanting, increase the quality, increase all those different things like we see Haridas Thakur, you know. So there's going to be that. But these are not that the point is the differences is what he's talking about here. Sannyas is to give up completely these aspects means it's just about pleasing Krishna. While tyag then is about giving up, performing those activities, giving up the fruits. Now within tyag, you can have karma yoga, means we're for the devotees, karma yoga and nishkam karma yoga. In other words, sakam karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga. Means you actually want the results, but you're willing to give some of these results to Krishna. And then nishkam karma yoga means you're not interested in the results like that, but you know, the situation like that, you're comfortable in those situations, it works good for your conditioning and these kind of things like that. And you appreciate the element of getting purified or being liberated from doing that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it's just like here. Okay, here's Brihad Vishnu Purana then says, quote, anyone in this world can be freed of all kinds of sinful reactions by performing atonement and the 12-year penance. Then the Acharya comments, in this world, any person, even outside the Varnashram system, who performs Chandrayana or atonement and 12 years austerity according to his wealth without desiring the results, becomes free from all kinds of sinful reactions, namely pataka, Mahapataka, Atipataka, and Anupataka. One becomes free not only from suffering in the hellish planets as a result of sinful reactions, but becomes freed of material bondage. Right? So he's saying anybody who does this, even if they're outside the Varnashram system, if they perform these, they will be purified up to this point of liberation. You know, depending upon, you know, how nicely they are performing it without desire for results. But the point is those results are there and they're doing it because, you know, they feel that they're impure. So they need to purify themselves by performing these actions. Right. Mm-hmm. So it still falls within that context that it may be the nishkam karma yoga. So sannyas, he's pointing out, is therefore giving up that mentality. Only bhakti can purify. You know, that's the whole thing, is that someone is having difficulty in Krishna consciousness, the only solution is devotional service. But if we think, no, there's another solution, then that's not what he's talking about here. That's not the actual position of sannyas. That's the position of tyag. You think that this activity will purify you. Now, it can be that the persons themselves understand that all you need to do is chant, but the person themselves either can't just sit down and chant or need something more external so that they feel they become purified. And so therefore, then they may recommend, like before was, okay, then spend 6 months on Padayatra. You know, because they think, okay, I'm going and that's my prayaschitta. So they may be doing it as a prayaschitta when actually the only prayaschitta is just chanting and devotional service. There is nothing else. It's only because of our sense of attachments to the external that we consider that the external has a validity that we must interact with or consider in this equation. And so therefore, for Krishna, it's not a problem because it's all him anyway, and it's following his rules. But the point is that the situational elements, the knowledge, the qualifications, all these things, and the action itself and the result of God, that's all secondary. And that is being done to please him. That's the primary. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami is making this difference that there should be no confusion that when it's just to please Krishna, that's what it's meant. And when the others are there because there's an interest in them and all that, even though it's all Krishna and controlled by Krishna, it still is not the direct activity that you can do. You're engaging the secondary. Right? So now if you're doing the primary just to please Krishna, it involves the secondary. You don't have to make a distinction. Like Mother Jashoda wants to please Krishna. She cooks to make a nice meal to serve him. So there you don't make any distinction between primary and secondary. We make distinction here because of our attachment to the secondary activities. Mm-hmm. And so depending upon what level, we may be attached from the mode of goodness. We may be attached from the point of liberation. You know, we may be attached from the point of religiousness, that it's a good thing, it'll be pious. We may be attached from the benefits we'll get. Mm-hmm. You know, but the point is in context of Krishna, that's why there's an overlap. The pure devotional service is what it is. And then the karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga, those are overlapped with what the karmis would be doing as karma or tyag, you know, or gyan, karma, gyan. So it's an overlap there, but the difference is it's overlapping, is it's being done for Krishna. While they're doing it, we're doing it for Krishna, they're doing it for Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. But if we have still some attachment to Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, then our applying it in relation to Krishna still has a mix to it. So that means to that degree you follow the rules, to that degree you're sincere, you get benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you say, I want this, but I'm a devotee, we don't have to follow all this, then on the material side, it's not going to work.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and that's obvious. You see, is that those who are presenting modern ideas of, you know, the social, political, economic area, and they want particular results, but because they're not following the traditional, you know, as given in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, they think that because we're devotees, we can do anything. And so then they're not getting the results that they're talking about. Whereas the more you're interested in the result, the more you're interested in karma yoga, the more you have to follow the karma properly. When you're dealing with nishkam karma yoga, then it becomes reduced down to only how much is necessary to actually make it function. But it's not about what is about going to get the results for you, because you're looking for liberation. You're looking to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Right? And pure devotional service, you're just looking at this part pleases Krishna. So that's actually the transcendental part. So that's why for us, we're interested in Daiva Varnashram. Daiva Varnashram is actually in the realm of Nishkam Karma Yoga. Okay. But the form of it, how much we would keep for Nishkam Karma Yoga, and to please Krishna, you know, as a form to use, then using that much only in our, you know, in Sakam Karma Yoga, it still is a nice transition, because you're not using anything extra other than the recommended of the acharyas, though you want the benefit for yourself. Then you start to give up the benefit for yourself, but it's not necessarily, it's as much about Krishna, but it's about being renounced. In other words, one, you're attached to the benefits you get in the external form, the other, you know, in Dharma Artha Kama, Nishkam Karma, or the jnana aspect where it's mixed, is then you're attached to the liberation aspect of it. But then it comes to the point where it's just about pleasing Krishna. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So we see is that those levels are there. So he's pointing out there should be no confusion, because you see when there is a, oh, we're devotees, we don't care for the rules. But the point is don't care for which rules. If you don't care for rules, you don't care for rules. And you see is nowadays those who say these things have a very strict sense of rules on what they follow. So no rules means no rules.
Yes.
So why are they choosing these rules over those rules? So we don't care for the rules means I don't have to follow anything the Vedas say or anything the Prabhupada says. I can just do whatever I want. And I pick and choose according to my conditioning, and my unfettered conditioning then, you know, will follow whatever is my particular socioeconomic background. Say what you want. You know, it's just like, it doesn't matter what you say. Like that, Ambarish Prabhu just sits there and calmly looks at you. He may, by what you're saying, decide he's not going to ever talk to you again or have any interactions with you, but he's very calm and peaceful because of his background. While someone else, you see all kinds of crazy things, they blow up and yell and scream because of their background. So say what you want. Manu mentions you can't act outside of your nature. So if by karma you have a nature that's supposed to be higher, and let's say, yes, you're born into a lower situation, but you're still going to act according to your nature, like Haridas Thakur. He appeared in a Mohammedan family, but he would only drink milk. He wouldn't eat any other food. And he was just absorbed in chanting the holy name. And then at five, he left home, you know, and just, you know, wandered and chanted from five. So yes, he's born in that, but he's acting according to his nature. Right? And then someone from a rougher nature, they're going to act according to that rougher nature. So as they are absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you won't see that. But as they go back into it, it's whatever it is will come out. So that's the point, is that you can always tell by how they behave, how they deal, how they, you know, this element of, you know, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, you can always tell. So Manu mentions it, that it's just whatever it is. Situation comes up, you'll see it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. So we're trying to go beyond that to acting simply as devotees, and that will come by association. When we associate with those who are more advanced, then we start acting according to a more advanced position. So it may be more advanced than our natural position. That means natural material position. But the point is the pure devotees manifest all the qualities of demigods. So once one is acting on that platform of sannyas, then it's natural. They'll act beyond what may be the conditioning. It doesn't matter. So then you see Magrari the hunter acting in such a gentle way because now he's acting on this higher platform.
Yes.
So that's the point, is this overlap between sannyas and tyag, you know, and our concept of, you know, gross material life and our unfortunate concept of spiritual life, which generally tends to be impersonal because it's, oh, there should be nothing. Why do they have this or why do they have that? Because having an impersonal concept of spiritual life, we don't understand that spiritual life means it has all the facility. It's just that it's all for Krishna. Material means it's for yourself. Spiritual means it's for Krishna.
Yes.
You know, so therefore, oh, that person was there and they were smiling. Why are they smiling, you know, like this? Why are they happy? No, you know, they should not be happy at all. So that's either thought is that, what do you call it? You know, advance is just, you know, impersonal behavior. Or they should have, or materialistic, they should have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. And that's the direction all these mundane things go. So you go into the impersonal, it'll go that way. But if you go into the senses, it also goes that way. Because when I go into the senses, whose senses? My senses. So that means everybody else is impersonal. Everybody else becomes part of how do they relate to my senses? So are they food? Are they people help me get food? You know, are they temporarily people who help me get food? You know, and then when they stop, then they become food, you know, like this and that. So it's always about myself. So either way it goes impersonal. That's the thing, is that you start stepping up, is that into the pranamoy, you at least accept that there's others that are there, and by cooperating, you get better results. It's still about my senses, but it's been mixed with the idea that if I work with others, I'll get more, right? That aspect of artha. So then, you know, it means the sense gratification, immediate gratification. Artha means that there's some long-term gratification and it's better. And so then, So it's a step up, because that then you're acknowledged, but it's according to the social things, you know, what my social group defines as good, as moral, as ethical. Then you get into the theistic of what God says is moral and ethical. But it's still about the benefits you get, because that's why it's dharma artha kama. But then you come to the point, okay, so, but it's not about the material. It's not about the material. Okay, we have to give up the material, but because we haven't come to the point of it's about God yet. You know, it's just if I follow God's, if I follow my senses, I get one thing. If I follow the social norms, I get more. If I follow God's laws, I get even more. But all this material is not actually of any value to the soul, so therefore liberation, because I see it about myself. So just as the anamoy is the bottom of dharma, I mean, you know, kama is the lowest of kama, artha, and dharma. So therefore then also the impersonal is the lowest of the spiritual concept. Is that you have, okay, there's the spirit, we have, I'm the soul, I'm Brahman, but then higher than that is understanding that there's God, and there's, and he creates, maintains, and destroys. He's the, you know, one who's in control of all that. So either through yoga, you know, or the Hiranyaka yoga, or through you know, the proper thing, you bring it up to devotion, then you bring it up to Bhagavan. So there's going to be these three stages. And so depending upon what's the particular mix and focus, then there's going to have that particular flavor. So we see is that there's always, there's the material, or there's the spiritual. Though moksha is an overlap between material and spiritual. So it only actually becomes spiritual if that moksha is in context of God as a person, you know, where you actually maintain an eternal relationship. If it's, he's okay, he's a person, at least temporarily, and then I give that up, then you're only, you stay within the material realm of moksha. But it's a good basis for the beginning stage of devotional service. So you see, the devotees are situated in vijnana maya, you know, because about the, I'm the soul, the sadhana and everything like that. It's all about uplifting. Then they see it in the context of don't have attachment to it, you know, without attachment. You know, you're saying do it for Krishna, but what sticks the most is that do it without attachment. Because they may or may not understand how to do it for Krishna, but without attachment, that they can try for. Because in the material world, we have done moksha before, you know. But doing bhakti for Krishna, that we haven't necessarily done, you know, like that. But we understand bhakti to the family or community or nation like that. And so we can kind of project that. And this way we make the switch. Well, because the holy name is so powerful, it will bring us to that side. We have the blessings of the Vaishnavas, then it will move that side. Does that make any sense?
Yes, Mother, yes.
So the point is he's making very much that we have to see the difference between primary and secondary. Yes. There should be no confusion. Otherwise, as soon as there's confusion, then we're using the logic, A, I am a devotee. B, I do devotional activities. C, therefore, whatever I do is devotional service. So it's a fallacy. A grass hut. Is that down in your garden?
Yes, Maharaj, it's in my garden. I just came down because my gardener came and he did some work, and he did it obviously wrong, so I'm trying to explain to him he should fix it. But yeah, now he got it, but before he couldn't understand what I want. Oh, okay. So that's why I went down.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. It's good. Like that. It's nice. The grass hut's a nice place.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so is that clear? So that way when we're going, because now we're going to go into these samskars.
Yes.
Right? But we're either performing the samskars, you know, because we want the benefits of the samskars, or are we performing the samskars because they're a matter of purification, mm-hmm. or we're performing the samskars because you know, Prabhupada and the Acharyas that they do gave these things, that these are the things you do. When Krishna is a grihastha or Lord Chaitanya is a grihastha or any of the devotees are grihastha, they perform these things because that's what they do. In Vrindavan, in Braj, Nanda Baba has the birth ceremony, as the name giving ceremony, you know, when he first starts crawling, then they have the ceremony. So, you know, we're given 10 main samskars, and that's what we're going to go through. But there's technically, there's more. There's, I think 48 or something like that. And so these are just finer points of the main samskars, like piercing the ears. It's not one of the main samskars, right? But it's definitely done with shaving the head. When you shave the head, then you pierce the ears. But the main thing is shaving the head, even if you don't pierce the ears. And you add pierce the ears, then it adds in, because much of the time they're going to pierce the ears anyway. You know, like that later, why not do it now? One, you're going to be used to it, and two, that's the purification. Okay, so then preliminary procedures. Okay. Then we have Mangalacharan, invocation. At the beginning of the Vivaha wedding, so now what's going to happen is that you have all the samskars. So now, in dealing with the samskars, then the yajna part and this thing of invocation and all those are going to be common. So then the idea is that whatever is the common activities, why not explain it in relationship to the wedding? Because the wedding is the biggest of all the samskars, and whatever elements are there are all within the wedding. So therefore, by giving all the full explanation of all the technical points in connection with the wedding, you get an understanding of the others. Then, having done that, then you're going then the other ones just become a very simple thing of this is what you do. Because you don't have to explain again how to do the yajna or how to do the preliminary activities. Plus, we also see is the samskars start from the wedding. We generally take it from the birth ceremony. That would be how we'd start it. But actually, there is no birth ceremony unless there's a wedding. When there's a wedding, then there's children. So now you have a birth ceremony. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And so you're going to take it up to the point where then now the person who is born, he's going to get married. Because once you do that, now you start another theories of samskars. Right? They've done theirs, but it's their parents' responsibility. Now when they get married, then it becomes now their responsibility for their children. That makes sense? Right? Yes. And then the antyeshti, the death ceremony, that's outside of this. It's always in a different padati. It's never in within this padati. Because that's considered, you know, doesn't have the It's not socially inspiring. So it's in a different book. While the samskars, then, is something everyone can get together, they can have a nice program, you know, everyone comes together, there's kirtan, everyone can dress up, get some nice prasad, there's nice social interaction. So it kind of takes care of all the social needs. So people talk about community. Community comes together naturally through either the direct activities of the kirtan and that, the deity worship, and which combines that, or the samskars. So when you drop out the samskars in Varanashram, you basically, unless they're coming to the temple, and that brings you to the temple for the morning and evening program or for a big festival. But what about in between the day? That's what the other activities take care of. So the idea is how to connect everything to Krishna. So therefore, the samskars, they take care of so many of these nice social activities. Right. Okay. At the beginning of the vivaha, wedding ceremony, or any other samskar, right? So it's being explained, as I said, in connection with the wedding, but it applies for all others. One should recite Mangalacharan, then make a platform, Vedi, which should be 4 hasta long, approximately 6 feet, on both sides. In other words, 6 feet by 6 feet, or 4 hastas by 4 hastas. And four mushti height, approximately 1 foot, with a canopy over it, right? So a mushti will be a fist like this, right? I mean, so it's four fingers high. So in other words, you're thinking, because to do four fingers, it gets a little hard to get them on top. But if I'm going to measure four fists, that's easy to measure, right? If I'm measuring just a few fingers, like four fingers or six fingers, then I use like this. But once I go beyond that, unless I'm specifically going for nine fingers, then I'll use that one, right? But this is not, this is more than nine, right? So this is 12 fingers. So therefore I use four mushtis. And so that puts it as, you know, that high, right? With a canopy over it, as stated in Kapila Pancharatra, quote, one should build an auspicious platform on the best purified ground, right? So not just anywhere. It should be four hands square and four fists high, and should be made with pure mud and smeared with cow dung mixed with pure water, right? So pure mud and that. So you can put bricks and mud, you know, like that, and build it up however you're building. And smeared with cow dung mixed with pure water without any husk, bones, hairs, coal, or burnt clay in it. The mandapa should be covered with a tordana, canopy, or a rope that is decorated with many kinds of leaves like mango, bokula, jambula, etc. So you can either have a canopy that goes, you have four poles in the corners, and so then you have a nice canopy, or you can just put the, you know, the garlands of leaves and flowers like that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because the rope is that, when you have a rope, it's twisted, right? And if you take it and twist it backwards, those threads will open. Where it opens, you can stick like a mango leaf in there, right? And then when you let it go again, it'll hold. You don't have to tie it. Or just simple lines of nice leaves, you know? Or you can then take a whole bunch and then tie it nicely, you know, however you're going to arrange it. Then eight auspicious pots should be installed in the eight directions, and many kinds of flags should be placed on top of them, starting from the east. The pot should be decorated with five colors. Then the platform should be decorated with the Chandra Tapa, sign of the half moon, and garlands. Ladies should decorate the platform and doors with five kinds of colors. The auspicious Mangalachana should be recited in that place, accompanied by the beating of drums, blowing of conch shells, ringing of bells, etc., and mukhya vadya, ulation of the women. All right, so ululation, then it's a traditional thing. So it's a standard part of the auspiciousness of the, you know, the ceremony, kirtan, like when the conch blows and you go into places more traditional, then ladies will do that ululation at that time, like that. And so you have all the nice things, the conches, the drums, the bugles, all these different things. Right, so you're setting up this thing, and then in that place, then the Mangal Archan will be done. So this nice program will be done. So then this thing, you know, four hastas long, 6 feet by 6 feet, then, you know, that becomes a nice platform. You see, when you're doing, because these are samskars, so it's a smaller platform. It can be done in the house. Generally speaking, in houses, there's a courtyard. So you could set this up in the courtyard. Otherwise, you set it up wherever you can. And if not, then you just, you know, the idea is that you have a nice auspicious place, it's been decorated nicely, and this is then you do something. This is where then you start your ceremony. One should recite the following Mangalacharan prayers to remove all obstacles and invoke auspiciousness. Yam Om Yam Brahma Vedanta Vido Varanti Pare Pradhanam Purusham Tatanye Vishvad Gate Karamam Ishvaram Va Tasmai Namo Vigna Vinashanaya. Obeisances unto him who is destroyer of all obstacles, who the knowers of Vedanta describe as the Supreme Brahman, and who others describe as the Pradhana, or totality of mundane elements. Some describe him as the Supreme Male Person, or Purusha, while others describe him as the Supreme Lord and the cause of the creation of the universe, Brihad Vishnu Purana. Right? So here's that you're starting off of removal of obstacles by acknowledging the Lord, who then is the one who removes all the obstacles. So in other words, you're going to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, this him means Krishna. It doesn't mean Ganesh. So it says in the beginning, there must be the worship of Ganesh. That means that that point there, then you're worshiping Krishna as the one who removes all obstacles. Right? That's the position. So we don't worship Ganesh. We just worship Krishna. Like that. Om tad Vishnu of paramam padagam sara pashyanti surayaha divi vachakshuratatam. Just as those with ordinary vision see the sun's rays in the sky, so the wise and learned devotees always see the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. Because those highly praiseworthy and spiritually awake Brahmins can see that abode, they can reveal it to others. That's from the Samaveda. Right, so this aspect of you're acknowledging that the Lord is removing all the obstacles. Okay, now having removed the obstacles, now what's the next point? It is taking shelter of those devotees that they understand Krishna, so they can, by association with them, they can give us Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And then who is this Krishna? Then the next point. Om Krishna Vaisachidananda Ghanaha Krishna Adi Purushaha Krishna Purushottamaha Krishnoha Au Karmari Mulam Krishna Saha Sarvai Karyaha Krishna Kasmam Krishna Kashamritam Adisha Mukha Prabhu Pujyaha Krishna Nandis Tasmin Ajanantar Bahye Yam Mangalam Talavate Kriti. Lord Krishna is the color of a new rain cloud. Therefore, he is compared to a transcendental cloud full of eternity, bliss, and cognizance. He is the original and supreme person. He is the origin of all activities and the one and only Lord of all. He is the worshipable Lord of the best of demigods. The controller of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, Krishna is without any beginning. Whatever auspiciousness is found within or beyond this universe, the devotees obtains in Krishna alone, Krishna Upanishad. Right, so what are we seeing in the first verse is that some may be seeing as the supreme Brahman, some as, you know, Paramatma, like that, some as the Purusha, who's the cause of everything, you know, beyond that to the, you know, to whatever level they're seeing Krishna, either on that platform of Brahman or Paramatma, then they're appreciating that. But it's the point is him who is the source of all these various expansions. Then by the grace of the devotees, then we can know Krishna, the person, Bhagavan, who's beyond, you know, the positions that are mentioned in the first verse. Right? So it's a natural, this is how you come up. So we see is that it's not just any old verses. There's a very specific purpose that's being going on here. Right? Then we have the Purusha Shukta, you know, which we discussed before. Mm-hmm. And that, should we read the translation or just here then the supreme, so first verse, the supreme Lord in the form of the universe has 1,000 heads, 1,000 eyes, and 1,000 feet, for he contains all the living entities. Having pervaded the universe completely to give it existence, being independent, he extended himself beyond it by 10 fingers. So he is all the elements that are there that all the living entities then use for their forms. But he's that original primeval aspect of it. But at the same time, is he is what is being used by all those living entities. So it's still there. So the childness in the child is the childness is Krishna. That's the original. But the childhood is also Krishna's potency. Right, the variety will come through his energies. The childness is his own inherent thing. In other words, he still have the masculine feminine principle. And so he's pervaded everything to make everything work. So there's nothing he hasn't pervaded. So there's nothing that he's not involved in. So this idea he created and stepped back and there's something separate. No, it's still him. But he as a person is stepped back from that. And so now you're dealing with these secondary elements and through the Brahman element, but it still has the masculine and feminine elements of Krishna and his as he's given it. And so therefore everything still works by Krishna's rules. There's never a point where, oh, it's up to us. yes, it's up to us to follow Krishna's rules. We apply it, we get the benefit. We don't apply it, we don't get the benefit. Two, the universes, past, present, and future, are but manifestations of the Supreme Lord who expands himself as the Purusha. He is the Lord of immortality, but has manifest himself as the Purusha in the universe so that the jivas may enjoy material fruits. Right? So he is beyond this whole material creation. So he's beyond the Purushas, avatars, as Mahanarayan, you know, but at the same time is so that the living entities who have turned their attention away from Krishna can have an opportunity to be engaged in activities and come back to Krishna, right? Because in other words, the jiva always performs activities. That's their nature, is to have a form and a mind, intelligence, and therefore activities and relationships. But if they turn away from Krishna, they still function in that same principles, but now within the material world. So then the Purusha has manifested all these so that we can do that. But he still remains beyond all this, right? Three, the past, present, future universes are manifestations of the Lord's powers, but the Lord himself is much greater. The material creation is but one quarter, and the eternal nature and the spiritual sky exists in three quarters portion. So he's manifest the material world for those who want to act, you know, in their activities without him. And he's expanded the spiritual world for those who are desiring to work, perform their activities in relationship to him. But he is beyond all that. He's beyond the spiritual and the material. So we say he's beyond the material, but he's also beyond the spiritual because he's the source of the spiritual. Right? You know, that's just, you know, that's the way it is. So you're trying to bring it back. So the Purusha Shukta, we see is starting with our position and the world, but showing how the Lord is there, it's created from him, he's expanded everything, but he's still beyond that. So that's why when Lord Chaitanya says everything's about Krishna, everything's about Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana and relationship to devotion to Krishna, that's literally what it's saying. It's saying it in all these very technical ways, but that's actually what it's doing, what it's for. Four, the three quarters portion of the Lord transcended the material portion. The Lord in the one quarter portion manifested the universe again, as he had done repeatedly before. The Lord of the one quarter portion began the work of creation by going all around, taking the form of all animate and inanimate objects, right? So as the aspect of Brahman, and that he himself, you know, as Paramatma, is expanding his that unlimited elements around, then he's making it all happen like that. So he's talking about the three quarters transcended the material. So the Vasudeva feature is above than the Purusha features that are in the material world. Though they're all transcendental, but we're saying the Vasudeva feature is then beyond in the three quarter portion like that. So still everything is made from the Lord, right? So therefore, even though he's gone beyond, but still within the creation, they said here, then he expands himself and he takes the form of everything that we see. Five, from that Lord, the Virat or universe was born. And in that Virat, Purusha, Paramatma of the universe was born, right? So Virat is all the things and all the combinations of things and all that aspect. So even though it does have that impersonal aspect, it's still Krishna who has taken all these things and they're all his potencies. So it has all the elements that a person is made from, this ear, this eye, this nose, these feet, you know, this kind of hair, this kind of mood and attitude, what kind of family, what kind of everything, all that's taken from there and put. So it's all, you can see is even though we're saying impersonal because it's generic, it still is not, it's still dependent upon the personal element. To have an impersonal thing, you still need the person that those impersonal elements are taken from. You can't get away. The person is the original, not the impersonal. Having appeared, the Virat Purush grew and produced the earth and the abodes of the jivas. So everything where they're going to live, all the abodes, wherever they live, all the 14 planetary systems, all the situations that they live in, all whatever is there, those things are all then manifest by the Lord. In other words, there's no situation that's not connected with the Lord. right? Because otherwise we're going to say is, okay, this situation is connected to the Lord, the temple, but everything else is not, right? But that's the Mayas. You don't see that it is. If you saw it was, you wouldn't be in Maya. So everything is Krishna. So what we would consider as the situational, the Brahman level, is still all Krishna. Six, the devatas, being the first beings manifested, performed a mental sacrifice to complete the creation, using the Virat Purusha, the totality of ingredients in the material world, as the offering. Spring was the ghee, summer was the fuel, wood, and autumn was the offering, right? Spring, because it's got the life and everything, and it's got the freshness of the ghee, is that. Summer is the fuel, wood, because summer is hot, you know, it has all those things like that. And autumn was the offering, because we see in autumn, that's when all the fruits and wonderful fruits and flowers and everything, they come in and everything. So then that becomes naturally offering. But we see here is that you have the situation that is all Krishna, but still the devotees need to perform an action, or the living entity has to perform an action, right? So the first beings, so you're going to start that off with the first beings. The devatas, they're performing action, performing all these ingredients that are there. Now they're going to do the first yajna. Seven, in this sacrifice, the kusa blades strewn around the fire for protection from rakshasas were seven, the seven Vedic poetic meters. And the fuel sticks were 21, 12 months, 6 seasons, and the 3 worlds. The devatas, who were performing the mental sacrifice, tied the Virat Purusha to offer him into the fire, just as one would tie the sacrificial animal. Because you're going to make the offering, just as the situation is Krishna, and all the different things that they're using to do all these things are all those situational things that are made by Krishna. Right, setting up and organizing the sacrifice is still out of the situation. You're organizing the situation. But there must be the sacrifice itself. Right? Mm-hmm. In here. And so that still has to be the Lord himself. Right? There mm-hmm. is nothing else other than the Lord. So the devotees in the situations that are the Lord are working in action with the Lord to get results for the pleasure of the Lord. So we can see the Purusha Shukta is defining what Gopal Bhatta Goswami was saying before, is what is sannyas, what's pure devotional service. That's all it's describing. But it's described in words that the materialist may take it in another way. So that's the foolishness that comes up, is that we'll think that, okay, I'm talking materialist, therefore I'll adjust or water down or change the philosophy so that supposedly they can understand it. But understanding it means they understand pure devotional service. If they don't understand that, what you did was not preaching. You know? So here we see the Purusha Shukta is still explaining exactly direct devotional activities by engaging the secondary in the Lord's service. Only describing pure devotional service. There isn't everything's expanded. All the Vedic verses expand from Purusha Shukta. So therefore, if they expand from there, it has to be saying the same thing. It just might get into a detail of, okay, what is the 1,000 heads, or, you know, what is the 21 sticks, or what are the 12 months, or what is this or that? And they get into the details there, but it's all going to be this. So that's why Lord Chaitanya then says, that's all there is, sambandha abhideya prayojana, in relationship to Krishna. That's all the Veda is talking about, nothing else. Any other conclusion is either not going as deep, or, you know, I mean, if you take this up to Vishnu and that's as far as you go, then it's the same principle, but you take it to Krishna because he's beyond the Lord of the material world and the spiritual world. Right, Vasudeva is the Lord. He's the Paramatma of the spiritual world. You know, he's the Lord of that. So Krishna, the Lord is beyond those two. That means that's Krishna himself in Braj. So it's already being explained. You know, and then we saw that verse before in the Mangalacharna, Krishna Vaisachidananda from Krishna Upanishad. The Upanishads are the philosophy of the Veda, and they're describing Krishna, you know, here, you know. But also just how it's that Krishna who's the Lord of the creation, the Lord of Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Lord of the demigods, Lord of everything.
Maharaj, one question on the detail.
Yes.
Here it mentions the 21 sticks.
But, yes.
in the ritual when we do, we only do Vimshati Kastika Homa. We offer only 20. Is there any reason?
That may be just depending upon which one we're doing it, because this one that we're using here, this is Yajurveda, so maybe they use 21.
Okay.
While we're doing Samaved, so then if it says 20, then it's 20.
Okay.
So in other words, something gets left out.
Okay, right.
You know? So in other words, certain things are already contained. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it talks about the five seasons and the sun.
Okay.
So you say, well, what happens to the sixth season? Because what's the feature of the sixth season? It's just sun. Sun is sitting on your head for 2 months. So if you mention sun, you don't have to say summer.
Yeah.
Because winter, you don't think of sun sitting on your head, rainy season, any other time. So they will have those, just like you see in the explanation of the elements of the material world. So then Kapila Muni, which we go by and Lord Chaitanya is accepting, is the 20, is 24. But those 24 can also be explained in 16 and also in 9.
Okay.
Right? You know, and they're all correct. It's just that you get the best explanations and widest range. Means, in other words, you can explain it by 9 if you know the system so well. Or if you know it fairly well, then you can do it by 16. But the 24 is perfect for explaining the whole wide range for anybody in any situation. So therefore, that becomes that. There are also ones who do it in 33, and that because we see after the creation, then Brahma, to make it work, that people would be interested in, had to create the six enemies and then all the other different things like fear of death and identifying with the body and all those. So those are also... But those are technically, we would take them as, these are subdivisions of the impure consciousness. So therefore, when we say polluted consciousness, it means those.
Mm.
So just this becomes the nicest. So here is that for whatever reason, they're explaining these things in this way because it works for this particular definition.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've made it to 9 o'clock. So and here, Jai. So thank you, and we'll see everyone tomorrow.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.